Blog Talk Radio.
It's time. Politics on the Navajo Nation, brought to you by Cal Nez Design, and hosted by Cal Nez himself.
You are listening to Politics on Navajo and the official Navajo Talk Radio. Your host, Cal Nez. I'm wondering how the weather is out there. Tonight we have a lineup of several different topics, but I am very, very grateful that you have tuned in. You know, we talk about all sorts of topics, you know, from business, politics, and the various different things that affect the Navajo Nation government, and, you know, just trying to keep an open line so that we can keep these things in discussion. There's nothing better than talking about it and bringing it out into the open and chatting about it. So you can call in and bring any topic that you wish to. So please know that the telephone number here is, 347-989-0048. And I am just very, very excited to get everybody to call in and give us some information and tell us what how things are going in your area, off the reservation, or even on the Navajo Nation. So the Navajo Nation, you probably hear, read on the newspaper and probably on the various media on the through the also through broadcasts like the various radio shows there, and of course they cover just what was some of the national notes and such like that. And but one of the things that's very interesting to me that I, you know, when I go down there thinking that, okay, here's a radio station that is owned by the tribe, and what an opportunity to be able to share so many absolutely incredible information to the Navajo people. And but, you know, but nonetheless, we have to we have to go in there and do whatever is possible to get the information out there. So, but anyway, yeah, and that's where we're at. And I'm asking all the guests to call in and to, you know, to be patient and to do, hold on 1 second. I'm looking at switchboards. I'm looking at telephone people that I asked to call earlier. And, but nonetheless, here we are, and I'm waiting for some of my guests to appear on my switchboard. And I believe I have two guests that I have invited. One is Jen. I see you're on the line, so please be patient, and I'll get to you. And then the other one is the guest that I would, you know, that I broadcast on Facebook. And I've always wanted to do an interview with this very renowned, actually very, very famous, in my opinion. And I am just, you know, I admire the tenacity that this gentleman and his partner and various different things. I mean, first he started out as a comedian, and then he morphed over, and now, as you can see, there's several movies out there that he's has participated in, and very well known. And I think the gig that he has participated in, or that he his business, it literally is a business, and it's called Ernie and James, and James and Ernie. I wanted to put that in real quickly. I don't know which one starts with an E and the other one starts with a J. So, you know, James and Ernie, and then Ernie and James. So I think it's Ernie and James. So I think that's the one. So I'm looking forward to that. And I want to do a profile on him. But before we get to him, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, and that's and I'll get back to it after the interview with Mr. Soucy. And that is that a lot of you out there are doing the pinion picking. And since I promised, and I actually did an interview earlier and recorded it, and unfortunately portions of that recording disappeared. And that's why I thought, okay, well, why not just bring the person on who can give us a very quick update and see how things are going and what it takes and how much input that people put into pinion picking. There's a lot of expenditures. There's a lot of time, dedication, but in the end, you know, it all really comes down to a business profile. And again, I'm always looking at most of everything that we do on the Navajo Nation. I hope to be able to inspire and to instill in people's mind that while they're doing these business ventures and selling it, is it in the right market? Is it in the right poundage of sell? Is it, how have they come to the conclusion about how much that their time is valued? And so when they sell it, you know, there's two ways to look at it. I guess you can sell it to the border towns. And then the other one is you can just store it and sell it to your own people and make the money and package it like a lot of people are doing right now. And then the last one is just to keep it. And she all winter, she is still dolly. Probably if you pick several pounds, she on the hajj, she March that, or maybe even February that. So it depends on how fast you can crack and how many of your family members are going to get into your stash. So it's going to be quite interesting. But all in all, you know, here's some of the factors that, you know, I'm not trying to say, okay, don't sell to to people that you want to sell to. That's your choice. If you want to go out there and sell to the border towns, fine. But just be aware that when you run out of your stash, are you going to have enough left over and that you've saved, or you sell everything, and then eventually, oh my gosh, when the season's over, are you going to look around and say, maybe I should have got some for myself? But eventually, when the season is over, because right now the highlight is real huge. I mean, the demand is very, very huge. And so, you know, the internal selling is probably going to be different. But I'll guarantee you one thing, the Navajo, all those border town traders, the ones that are buying it, you know what? Their biggest customer is going to be who? Do you think that the Lagana is going to be buying it? Well, maybe some, but majority of it's going to be back to the Navajo people. So when we're hauling it off the Navajo Nation and selling to the border towns, we're going to be simply purchasing it back. So having said that, you know, let me bring my first guest on, and her name is Jennifer, and we'll do a an interview here about how she and her family have done this for years, talking about pinyon picking. So, yeah. You're listening to Navajo Talk Radio. And Jennifer, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right.
Hello. My name is Jennifer. I'm originally from St. Michael's, Arizona. But I reside here in Flagstaff for the past 5 years. My family comes from Clagito, where my grandma lives, and yeah, my clan, Black Sheep, and the one who walks around.
Yeah. So earlier we had a conversation with your mother and your grandmother. One of the interesting things that we discovered is that in the process of really understanding this thing, your grandma, who goes out there, and I mean, it is, in my opinion, a lot of hard work, tons of hard work. Can you tell us a little bit about how what Grandma has done in the process of getting this information, I mean, getting these pinyons?
Well, for these past couple of years, there hasn't really been any pinyons, and pinyons only come, like, every other year. Well, there's 2 or 3 times a year, and this time, you know, it started coming down, and my grandma would leave, you know, every morning before the sun came up. She would pack her lunch and to the mountains, park beside of the road, and, you know, start looking for trees that have pinyons. And she would make her journey out to the middle of nowhere and stay out there. And, you know, she's done this for many years. I can remember, as far as me being so, so young, that she would take me all the time with her to the mountains, and I would have fun running around and stuff like that while they went pinyon picking. They had, like, a pinyon shaker, and they would pack lunch food, and sometimes, you know, we would cook out up in the mountains, and it was fun growing up like that with my grandma. And now I'm just very thankful that she's lived this long to still continue on doing it. And she's 80 years old, and she does this. She likes this time of year because it keeps her busy rather than being at home sewing aprons and making pot holders and blankets and things like that, stuff that she does at home. In the meantime, you know, right now while pinyons are falling from the tree, she goes out there and she loves picking.
Yeah. So, yeah, and she was telling me that I got a quick question for you. You said a pinyon shaker. What is that?
It's like a board thing that they used to use. They would gather up a bunch of pinyons that had, like, needles and pine cones and rocks and stuff like that. They would put it on the pinyon shaker. It's like a screen, and they would put everything on there and just shake it and everything like that. All the needles, all the rocks and the dirt and stuff like that would fall out, and there would be, like, pinyons on top of the screen. Kind of like a cheap, easy way.
Is that right? Wow. So they had some pretty sophisticated equipment to be able to get some of these. Now, there's a lot of people who didn't even know the actual process of picking pinions. Honestly, I got to admit, when I was about 30 years ago, I thought that you'd go back home and you'd actually find these cones and then break them open and, you know, but I didn't realize that there was a different method. How is it done?
I believe it falls off. I think when it's dry from the cone, it falls down. And that's when you know they're ready, when they start falling. Yeah, you can't pick them from the cone because it has to come out from the cone itself.
Yeah. So, which means that you're literally on your knees.
Yeah, you're on your knees all the time picking. And my grandma, she would put these little rubber stuff on her fingers, and she would pick, and put her little coffee can right there, and she would put like a towel down and stuff like that, so you know all the needles and stuff don't poke her knees. And it's a lot of work to do pinion picking. I remember like a few years ago I tried doing it. It was a lot just to pick like a few of them. I probably only picked like 10 pinions. It's a lot of work.
So literally everybody who's out there who purchases these pinion, there's really not a scientific way to even gather these pinions. You literally just, I mean, it's almost to the point of literally one seed at a time. You go out there.
Yep.
Is there any way you can get like a whole bunch of it?
That's why you have the pinion shaker. You can gather up a whole lot, maybe put it in a sheet, just kind of scoop it up from the ground, put it in the sheet, and then put it on top of the pinion shaker, and just keep shaking it.
Oh my gosh! There you go.
Yeah.
Ah, so you kind of rake it up a little bit, and then okay. Hey,
yeah.
There's a trade secret,
yeah.
Right there. Amazing.
I guess older people put their minds to use to, you know, how's the faster way to do it. I mean that's the old way,
yeah.
I know of.
Yeah. All right. Lastly, one of the things that I wanted to say was, so you've got a this pinion, and you've got it, and there's a lot of people selling, and has your grandmother or yourself or any of your family members ever thought about turning this into a business?
No, not really. Like I said, you know, my grandma, she does it every year when pinions come, and she just saves them. Sometimes she would just save it for her grandkids, and she would save it for past winter time when, you know, we're all craving it or something like that. She would always have pinions with her during pinion season time, and it would make her last up till probably February, March, April. But,
wow.
As for selling them individually, I don't think she would do that. She's too old to be cooking them, bagging them, and stuff like that, but you know, what income that she does make, she does sew and things like that.
Wow. Well, I think that's a factor that I think that even the Navajo Nation government, as well as the Navajo chapters, and, you know, why not create a network that could have possibly, you know, turned this into a very profitable business for a lot of people. You know, like they used to do that way back when they used to make these rugs and, you know, and hire the local people, and Navajo Nation would sell it elsewhere. And, you know, I guess some of the hazards about, there's a very good side of it. You can go out there and sell and, you know, make money. It depends on how many pounds you take it in. But yet at the same time, there's also the downside of that, and there's that, you know, there is some possible areas that might be overlooked. I mean, has anybody ever thought about that? Meaning that, you know, selling to the border town? Is that the only place that we can all go to sell?
I hope not. I really hope there's other places out there that can buy rather than people like in the area that do. I call around all the time. I call to different places. Call to New Mexico. I call to like Sedona, Prescott, Camp Verde, and just different places like that. Somewhere different. Or I know my grandma, you know, can maybe possibly get more. But like I said, I'm not too sure because I do my little research for her. That way, she's not selling it to small places nearby where they give it to her for so cheap. Because I know what amount of time and work she puts into it.
Yeah, and that's true. So, yeah, hey, thank you for your time, man. That's very interesting. Is there anything that you want to share with the listeners out there?
Not very much. Just, you know, if you're pinion picking out there, you know it's a lot more worth than what you're already selling it for. Either just save it, because later on it might be worth more. Just keep picking and keep saving. You never know. Because, you know, later on, people will be pinions left and right, and just, you know, they start craving it. Because, like I said, it only comes around every once in a great while.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. So your family's from the Clagato area. I realize Grandma is, and then you're from St. Michael's. So
yeah,
I understand that she told me that this is just FYI for everybody out there, is that she went back. I mean, she picked in certain area, and then a week later, she goes back over there, and there's some more that have opened and dropped. So,
yeah.
You know, don't vacate one area and think that it's all been overpicked, because they're still opening and dropping.
Yeah, there's different places that she goes to. I know she, like I said, she goes probably Monday through Saturday. She'll be picking, and Sunday she'll just kick back at home, and the next day, you know, before the sun comes up, she'll be going again and exploring different areas. She says there's too much pinions, and I can't stay in one spot. So you just get so anxious to want to just pick them all up, but you know you can't, and it's only just her pinion picking herself, so she can only do so much, but she's really fast at picking.
If she's interested in selling it, how do we get in touch with her?
You have my number, so.
Okay.
I can give you my number.
Okay. Well, so what I'll do is that anybody out there who's interested in buying some, because it sounds to me like she's got a big monster stash, and congratulations to you guys that you have some. And so you can call my number, my cell number, 801-688-9297, and I will certainly give the number and get that connection going. And I urge also the rest of the people out there. And Alana, Jen, I appreciate your time.
Thank you, too.
Okay. And so I thank you very much again, ladies and gentlemen. This is Navajo Talk Radio. This is Cal Nez. And I will bring my other guests, and we'll do, let's see, I did tell Jen that I was going to be on the interview for a good 15 minutes or so. So I think that's about perfect what we did. And I don't want to keep Mr. Sosi waiting, but I know that he's calling in, and there's a lot to chat about. And so I'll bring my next guest by other caller in reference to the pinion picking. And because there's some areas that are quite different. So I hope you can hear me. Is this Wynn?
Hi, yeah, this is Wynn. Hi.
Yeah, Wynn. You're from which area? Introduce yourself and where are you from?
Wynn Eldridge from Tuolumne, New Mexico.
Okay. Just give us
What's that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, welcome. I appreciate that. Now, there's been a big monster bumper crop out there with people picking everywhere. what has been your experience in your area?
In my area, well, we had not a whole lot, but there was a few droppings of pinions, but I didn't get a chance to pick any, maybe just like a couple handfuls. And
are there people still picking the mountains there west of you? Because there's a whole mountain range right there.
I heard more like in Sheep Spring area, they're still picking pinions, but I just haven't stopped there and picked any.
So you might even just, rather than picking it yourself, you might even just become a customer. Is that what you're kind of waiting on then?
Yeah, I'm more like just eat them. it's been a while since I picked pinions. I used to pick pinions with my mom, my grandparents, and my
Yeah, you're kind of breaking up a little bit. I losing every other word.
A lot of words. It's back-breaking, you know. Back.
Yeah.
And you're constantly underneath picking all day long, but it's worth it.
Mm. Yeah. So you don't mind buying a sack that's a sandwich bag that's about maybe 10, about they're selling, well, I've seen it, between $10 and $25 a bag.
Yeah, I know it's a lot, but I can handle the $10.
Okay, that's awesome. So that kind of gives you an idea, ladies and gentlemen. There's areas that people are very much involved and some areas where people, well, okay, but, it is what it is. But
yeah.
When? I'm glad that you're thinking about being a customer. So there's a lot out there. And all winter.
Yeah. That's right.
All right, Wynn, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I will, that was Wynn Eldridge from the Tualina area. So, yeah, I am going to, bring our next guest on and talk about the business. I'm really looking forward to our next guest. And I mean, I really am honored, totally, absolutely honored. And I'm excited about this, man. I've been waiting like forever to even get close to this guy and find out what gives him that motivation to do what he does. I saw a performance here in Salt Lake City at the Indian Walk-In Center one time, and I was very impressed, and I was like totally laughing like crazy. And that is I have a guest on, and you probably well know him and probably seen him on either live and also on the internet and also probably in concert or you know him personally. And the last thing is that you probably have seen him in the movies, and that is Mr. Ernie Sosi. So what I'll do is I will bring him on right after this very, very quick break.
Politics on the Navajo Nation. The official Navajo Talk Radio, hosted by Cal Mel.
You're listening to Navajo Talk Radio. This is Cal Nez, your host. And shade kachit in shlinot kanitani bashin a karinella shiche bitanida shnale yusna sharo in weights as long as tieto tosatoro tosis aroi lay taho taho yere are shashina eight kapat and long. A court or in shlino, I appreciate it. And I own a graphic design and advertising agency. And so most of the ventures and things that I do, I believe that I tried so hard to promote business. Business. And truly really not that remote of an idea to the Navajo people. And the reason why that I say that is that when we're like this pinyon picking, whatever, however much that you sell, you make money. And so, but this guy has brought so many laughter to the Navajo Nation. And yes, he's a businessman and he goes out and, you know, he has a talent and he gets paid for it. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I'm very, very proud of that. So I want you guys to get to know him, and I sure like to get to know him. And that is, and I wish I had a drum roll here, but I don't have a drum. So, Mr. Ernie Sosi, hey! Can you hear me okay? Hello, can you hear me okay, Ernie? Are you on the phone? Hajla? Okay, I think we're having a connection issue here. Let me see what I can do. Hello, can you hear me okay? I am not hearing him. I don't know if he hears me. Okay, let's try again. Hello, this is Cal Nez. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you just fine.
Okay, sorry about that. I don't know what was going on. I could hear you, but
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, hey, yeah, this is Ernie. And I am calling from Windrock.
And, Ernie, tell us about your clan.
Okay, my clan, my clans are Tohane. That's my mom's clan, Tohane, and Shle. Totochini, Bushishchin. And I'm originally from Fort Defiance. And you have to forgive me, man. My Navajo is not fluent. I know nothing to stay alive. Like, I know Iyo. And I know the Chin Shisnishi.
Okay. That I didn't know. And where is your I know that a lot of people are from, you know, they say they're from Winter Rock or Fort Defiance. Where is your family originally from?
I'm originally from just east of Navajo in the little valley called Toluto, New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like between the Side Lake and Navajo, New Mexico. That's where I grew up. That's where my childhood was spent, you know. My mom's side, all her family. I'm actually related to the late, great Leo Watchman, who was a cattleman, and he was a representative, state representative for New Mexico, and, you know, he's an all-around guy. So I kind of, that's my mom's older brother. So my mom is a former Watchman, Loretta Sosi, but I grew up there.
Yeah. So did you, which high school did you go to?
I was kind of like a res dog, man. I moved around a lot in my school career. My mom was an educator, so she would move, like, I lived in St. Lee. Most of my childhood is where I kind of grew up. And then I went to high school in Winter Rock. And then I got my last year, my mom pulled me out and put me in Gallup. And I graduated from Gallup High School. maybe back in the 80s. So I kind of experienced different places. I even did a little summer school stint in Cleveland, Ohio, believe it or not. I had to go to summer school.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I lived with my aunt for a summer up in Cleveland, Ohio, so I even had some out-of-state education.
So you, okay, so from there to there to there, and then you, Cleveland, Ohio. I've never heard of Navajo. I mean, that's kind of an unusual place.
Yeah, it is. I was the only one, Navajo there. my aunt,
yeah.
she got captured by the Mohawks, so that's why she was up there.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. You know, for all those listeners that are just joining us, I have with us on Navajo Talk Radio, I want to do kind of a business profile and kind of get to know beyond the just what's really in depth and, you know, his business, which we'll get to. And but one of the things I want to do is I want to get to know the man. I want to understand who Ernie Sosi is, and so that's why I'm asking all these kind of background information. We'll eventually get to, you know, how you got started, finish out with what your last or what your most current projects are, and what's into the future, and then even how your partnership is going with June. So from there, and then you came back, and what about your family? I mean, you're welcome to share with us what you want to share with us.
Okay, yeah. Well, hey, I appreciate the different questions, because most of the time we get the same old question, how'd you get into comedy? Where'd you guys meet? You know, that kind of stuff. No one really asks us the questions that you're asking right now, family and school and all that kind of stuff, so I appreciate that. I don't mind talking about, my background other than doing comedy, I am a family man. A lot of people don't know that about me and James, but we try to mention every chance we get, because a lot of people think that James and I, sleep together, eat together, live together even, being James and Ernie. And just recently I got this one person, like there's rumors going around, one person asked me, hey, I heard you and James broke up, like we're married or something, I was like, yes, I caught him on stage with another comedian, We're kind of joking around about it. But a lot of people don't know that, James lives in Farmington, New Mexico, he's with his wife and his family, and I live in Winter Rock. And so we meet up, we don't see much of each other, during when in our stage, in our private lives. We don't see each other until we actually have a show. And incidentally speaking, we just returned from Alaska last night. In fact, we flew back in. We're up in Anchorage for a few days. We did a show up there. We've been hanging out with each other for the last few days, and finally got home to our families last night. But yeah, so I am. I'm married, and my wife Miranda. We have four kids, two older kids, Taylor, Alicia, then I have two younger boys, Piper and Courage. We named our littlest one Courage. We call him the last of the Mohicans. That's our last child.
Piper. Yeah, I met Piper here in Salt Lake.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So what are those? I'm just curious. So, tell me about the names.
Oh, the names.
Why
Piper and... Yeah, kind of unusual for Navajo. I try to be, a little bit different. And I don't know. It's just it was a name I always liked, Piper. There used to be an actress, Piper Laurie, and for some reason I really liked her name. And it's kind of a unisex name too, Piper or male or female. And he watches, we watch Henry Danger, right? And Henry Danger on Nickelodeon, and his little sister's name is Piper. But and then Courage, I was thinking about naming him, I wanted to name him Brave, kind of a warrior, tough name, Brave. But my wife wasn't really having it, So one of her friends said, hey, what about Courage? You know what I mean? And I said, hey, that sounds pretty cool. And as soon as we heard, you know, the name Courage, that was kind of it, you know. And so we named him Courage just to be different. I think it's probably because my name is just, I got stuck with an old-fashioned name, you know, Ernest. That's like from the 60s, 50s even, you know, Ernest. Not to mention that I am the third, you know, so I want to be, I want my kids to have a little different names.
So you're the third?
I am the third, yes. I never met my grandfather, Ernest Sr. My dad's junior, and then I'm the third. And that's the thing too. I was gonna name my first son Ernie the fourth, but I didn't want to ruin his credit. You know what I mean? Because bad credit will follow your name.
Well, you broke the cycle then.
Yeah, I broke the cycle then. But yeah, so
go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say that's one of the things I really appreciate is family. You know, that's one of the things that motivates me, man, to do what I do.
Yeah. So you live right there in Window Rock or Fort Defiance?
Yeah. Downtown Window Rock, man. I live right here.
Yeah. So, now, I know is the comedy gig your main business, or is that kind of a sidebar?
It used to be a sidebar, but it has turned into our mainstay now, doing comedy. Well, along with comedy, under that title, there's motivational speaking, you know, and sometimes emceeing duties. And so it kind of falls all underneath that. But yeah, that's kind of our mainstay, is just being public speakers, whether it's motivational speaking or hitting a conference entertainment, or talking to kids, or in this case, we went up to Alaska and we did a kind of a motivational speaking / humor event, you know. So along with our comedy, we have a positive message of just being, just being drug-free, alcohol-free, and just all around wellness, you know, physical, spiritual, you know, psychological. We kind of talk about a lot of stuff regarding just native wellness and community wellness as well. But yeah, so that's kind of our main gig. Outside of that, you know, I do acting. I started off pursuing acting. That was kind of my main thing I wanted to do, but that's very, very difficult to get into that business. That's just the way the nature of that business. So comedy kind of became my day job, so to speak, and I do acting jobs every now and then whenever they present themselves, but again, they're few and far between. I would like to do more theater work, you know. I did start a nonprofit theater company called Nearwater Theater Troupe, and that's just now kind of getting going. But it's been around for a long time, the idea of it. And I'm hoping to take that around, and our goal is to take the theater experience to the res, you know, for kids and communities that have never seen a play or never been to the theater, you know. So that's kind of one of my main labors of love, I guess you could say, is that business there, the theater business.
Yeah. Now, let's kind of take a step back a little bit, back to, so now you're in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah.
At what point did you say, hey, and how did you come up with this? How did you find your partner? Tell us about that experience, about how you guys, what got you rolling?
Okay, well, in high school, just before I was graduating, I was kind of one of those kids that really didn't know what to do or what I was going to do. You know, I kind of grew up in a at-risk youth, or, you know, troubled adolescent. I was one of those. And that's kind of one of my story, if anyone's ever heard me tell my story as far as motivational speaking. So I was kind of at a disadvantage as far as really having a plan, my after high school, college stuff. I was kind of lost, you know. So I started off doing trade school. Right after high school, I went to Albuquerque TDI, it was called back then, the technical school, and I studied carpentry. and I got a certificate in carpentry because I thought I was going to, because my dad was in the carpentry, in the construction business, you know. I kind of learned from him, and I thought I was going to be a construction person. But I did that for 2 years, you know, and I framed houses in Tucson, Arizona, and it was just, it was hard work, man. It was tough, you know. I lasted 2 seasons, and I was like, okay, I can't do this for the rest of my life. It was too tough. So I started thinking about other stuff. Started thinking about, like, I was right around then the computer age was coming in, so I thought about, you know, being a computer person. But that didn't jive with me too well, so I had to kind of just rethink it again. And so it took me a long time to find my niche, so to speak, something I wanted to do that really meant something to me. And so it was by chance that I got exposed to acting, to the movies. When I was 17 years old, I was walking the streets of Washington, D.C. My mom was working there, and I went to visit her for a couple of weeks after school, high school, or, you know, summer, and I came across a movie being shot in the streets. The movie was called D.C. Cab, and it had all these actors, or some of them I recognized from TV. The main ones were Gary Busey, and Mr. T was in it. This was when he was huge. Just done Rocky, and he was making his next, you know, movie, I guess. Anyway, I hung out on set for like 2 days as an extra, and that's kind of how I got bit by the acting bug, I guess you could say. And that's the first time I was exposed to the performing arts, which were the movies. So yeah.
So you were just watching from the side, and were you invited right there, or how did it go?
Well, it was a parade scene, you know, at the end of the movie there. So they had, you know, they needed like extras, like hundreds of extras, and I was just one of those faces, man. And you can actually see me in the crowd at the end of the movie. The credits are rolling. But the cool thing is, I watched them shoot for 2 days. You know, like you could get right in there because there was a. You know, people were watching them, you know, shoot. I was going to shoot scenes, you know, and like kind of got an inside scoop of how movies are made, you know, watching two actors, you know, say dialogue to each other and then cut, you know, and the whole nine yards. I was exposed to directors and, you know, just the whole element of being on a movie set. And that kind of interests me. But even at that time, I didn't really think I was going to be a performer. That came a little bit later after high school when after movies started coming out, like native movies, like Powell Highway, that was a big influence on me, on my choice to become an actor. And then Geronimo, you know, that was being made, and they're casting around here, Wind Rock and locally. And that's when the seed really started taking boom right there, was when these Indian movies started being made. That really had a big effect on me. Seeing that, you know, real Indians being actors starring in movies, you know, Gary Farmer, Wes Studi, Adam Beach, you know, and I was like, dang, okay, Indians do act, they can act, and that's kind of what got the ball rolling for me. I wanted to be one of those guys. So, and that's when I found my place as far as education. That's when I decided to go. I was studying anthropology in college, and I did archaeology for about 12 years before I started pursuing acting. And actually went to college and studied for acting. So I actually have higher, you know, college level training as far as performing, which came in valuable to me, man. I learned everything.
Oh, is that right? Well, so your first thing was you're an actor. But what really, really went big for you guys is the comedy. Where did I know you're still, not to say that you vacated it, but you're still, you know, doing it. But where did it kind of, all of a sudden we're hearing this James and Ernie gig a big time on the res?
Yeah, that happened pretty fast too, honestly. The comedy thing was the farthest thing from my mind as far as performing. It was something that I liked to watch, stand-up comedy, back in, especially like in the early 80s when stand-up comedy was really making waves, you know. And then into the 90s, you know, I'd watch stand-up comedy all the time. I never thought about trying to be a stand-up comic because I was too insecure and too, you know, afraid to be on stage by myself, you know. being myself and doing comedy, trying to make people laugh. I thought it was too terrifying. But I really love watching stand-up comedy. It's one of my favorite things to watch as an audience member. And then there was, by pure chance, I guess, there was a comedy competition in the Navajo Times that I read about, just kind of a little blurb, a little sidebar about a comedy competition looking for Native comics, you know, kind of thing. That caught my eye and had a number, you know, and to sign up for this event that was upcoming, maybe like a 1 month out or something. And I've really been watching comedy, and I've been trying to get into the movies at that point. And I figured, okay, it's my chance to, you know, try stand-up comedy and be a comic and see if I can do it. And I literally had to learn how to do stand-up comedy for this event. You know, I had an idea of how to do it, but I really didn't know how to put a set list together and all that. So what I did is I bought a book, How to Do Stand-Up Comedy. And I literally taught myself how to do, because there's a technique to stand-up comedy, you know. There's actual techniques that you can apply, you know. A lot of people don't know that. They try to get up and just be funny, and that's not really, sometimes that doesn't work. You know, some people are just naturally funny like that, but in my case, I had to kind of teach myself. I had to have a technique, you know, a structured technique to learn from. And so I did that. I studied, learned, I taught myself how to do a set of stand-up comedy and for this big event that was coming up. And when it did come up, I showed up, and that's where I met James. James was a... I never met James, and he was at the same event, doing the same thing, you know, trying comedy for the first time. And for me, it was a self challenge thing. And I told myself before that if I don't do good on this, you know, if I bomb, that's it. I'll just go back to watching comedy. You know, be happy with that. That was kind of the deal I made with myself. And my wife wanted to go too, but I was too scared. You know, I didn't want anyone to witness this, so I told her, no, I just, you know, I got to do this. I don't want to do this by myself in case I fail, you know. I don't want any witnesses. So that's how really uncertain I was of it. But turns
so
out...
So you were actually shy about doing your first performance?
Yes. Yeah. In fact,
yeah.
I was...
To your own wife.
So, yeah, exactly. I denied her. I was like, no, you stay here. I got to do this alone. but that's where I met James. He was one of the. There was only four of us, and when James was telling me that when they signed originally, there was like 25 amateur comics signed up, you know, Native comics. But when it came down to the night, only four of us actually showed up. So it's kind of a testament of how, you know, frightening comedy can be for some people. You know, it is pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
Anyway. but so the four of us showed up and we did it. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you
feel
on
your first... I always wonder where the other two went, you know, what happened to them, because James and I were just one of them. Him and I won the event, you know. James came in first and I came in second. And then I continued my... the thing is that gave me the confidence. I did so well that it actually gave me the confidence to keep going, you know. And for the next year, I just kind of kept doing... I kept doing comedy wherever I could. As a solo comic, and James pretty much did the same thing. You know, I would open for like Vincent Craig. I would get on wherever I could, wherever there was an event, you know, do like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and just kind of work my comedy that way. And that's so it's been a whole year trying to still learn how to do it, you know, still building my confidence. A year into it, that's when James and I actually got together and formed the duo of James and Ernie, and that took off pretty quick. Within our second year is when James and Ernie was exploding all over the scene, you know, locally. And that I realized that was kind of a phenomenon, because most of the time, you know, it doesn't happen that fast. Sometimes people have to work it for, you know, 10, 15 years before they even get their name out there. So it was pretty quick for us.
Well, we have about 3 minutes left in the show here, and okay. So just lastly, well, I appreciate you being on here with us, you know, this evening. I mean, I wanted to kind of get to know the person behind the behind the scenes, so to speak. And what's you know, now in terms of the business aspect of it, or just you as a human being, what's happening? What do you have for the future?
Okay, yeah, well, the company is a business, right? It's a fairly, we're making a living off of it. We've been doing it full-time now in our 14th year, and that's how we pay our bills, So but a lot of people think we're rich, like we're millionaires, but no, that's not the case, man. We're making it. We probably get paid, maybe a decent, if we're working for the tribe or something, we're probably getting a lower level, equivalent to a lower level job position, enough just to stay above the water and pay our bills. But right now we're working on a reality show, man. We're trying to put out there, and we're pitching. And we have a friend of ours, producer friend in Los Angeles, who's pitching this idea to some companies. And we went through one already, and we're in our second one now. It's kind of like trying to get a reality show. It's kind of like if you ever watch American Ninja Warrior, there's all these obstacles. You got to get through so many to get to the button, right? And so that's kind of what it's like. You got to pass all these, big wigs and producers and whatever, and trying to get to the people who make the decision, to hire you. So that's kind of what we're working on now, is a possible reality show. And that's, it could go or it could not go. It all depends. But we leave that in the hands of God, man.
But that's where do we see your gig next?
We're gonna be playing down in Phoenix area in November. We have our other showcase comedy, 49 Laughs Comedy. We'll be playing that at Longview Casino on November 21st. It's kind of our next big show there. We're kind of just doing these little local regional conference. We got some school gigs coming up. We'll be talking, doing some motivational speaking at Navajo Nation schools, here and there in the next month. So kind of just keeping it real and staying humble. We don't refer to ourselves as celebrities or stars. That's for people in Hollywood, man. We're just from the res, man, and we love doing comedy. We love making people laugh, and we love inspiring people. And that's who we are.
Yeah, we have about 10 seconds. If they wanted to get in touch with you, what do they do?
You can go to jamesernycomedy.com and Facebook as well, James Ernie or James Jones or Ernie Sosi. We're out there, man. Just check it out and you'll find us.
All right. Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah, Lana. And I'd like to have you back on again here probably within the next 2 months or so. So thank you very much.
Sure. All right. Thank you too, Cal.
Yeah, dude.
Take care.
Hagushima.
All right.
There you go. That was the Ernest David Sosi the Third. And boy, that was an honor. And boy, time goes by so quickly. You're listening to Navajo Talk Radio, and I'll have some more guests on. And thank you for all the listeners from all over the world. And please follow us on Facebook, and as well as on the Blog Talk Radio, www.blogtalkradio.com/Calnez. And we do this every Sunday night and also Wednesday. So thank you, and we will be in touch with you on Wednesday or when the time is necessary. This is Calnez. This is Navajo Talk Radio.
Politics on the Navajo Nation, the official Navajo Talk Radio, hosted by Cal Nelson.